south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Hey, you know, I've got some very smart listeners out there. How'd that happen? Like, for example, this email that came in from Lorna. She said, Johnny, you've been talking about mating and dating Latin American style. And relationships, and you personally never gave us any advice. You told us about some weird and funny stuff others think about it. So what do you think? Now, as for me, I've dated some Latin guys, and here's my two cents about it. She says, every woman knows this, but will never admit it in front of a guy, or maybe even her own friends. The secret to a long and successful relationship slash marriage is... Now, I don't want this to sound cynical, Johnny, but here's the key. Selective little white lies and believable denials. Because, Johnny, just try telling the truth 24 hours a day, and man, it's a fact all your relationships will suffer. Then she says, Johnny, on your advice, I looked up Jordan Peterson, that famous Canadian psychologist. I read his book, 12 Rules for Life, and all through that book, he keeps saying, one of the best things you could do for yourself is quit telling lies. He says, be truthful in everything. And he admits that's painful and sometimes will have a bad effect at first, but in the long run, it's good for everyone. Well, I beg to disagree. She says, just try it yourself. Try telling the truth for 1 or 2 days straight and see how many enemies you make. Then she says, in fact, once there was an old Jim Carrey movie where for the whole movie, all he did was tell the truth. With generally disastrous consequences. Anyway, Johnny, that's my two cents. Keep up the good work. And by the way, Johnny, you do have a way of being lovable and hateable at the same time. I don't know how you get away with it. Signed, Lorna. P.S., she says, I'll be coming down to one of your seminars real soon, and I might be a single, might be a double. Depends on the circumstances. Right now, with the crowd I'm in with anyway, it's hard to convince anybody. The United States is like a drowning man going down for the third time. Nothing can save him. Or should I say drowning person, because you can't say drowning man anymore. Oh, but everyone agrees there's something drastically wrong going on, but the United States always pulls out of it, right? You know, God's country and all that. She says, Johnny, when it finally collapses, I want to be watching from a nice, safe distance, south of the border. All right, then we have this email from Stan in Minnesota. He says, John, here's my relationship advice for mostly men. He says, listen and listen well, men. You never truly know a woman until you meet her in court. That would be good t-shirt or bumper sticker material, huh? He says, John, you know, the best compromise after you've been divorced a few times like me is to become not another husband, but just a live-in handyman. That could work, huh? All right, then we have Martha, otherwise known as Marta in Spanish. She says, Dear Johnny, I was born in Puerto Rico, and at 12, I moved up with my family to New York City. She says, from a gringa slash Latina's point of view, I can pass for one or the other, or both, really. And I've had both kinds of relationships, too, some with macho Latinos and some with white bread gringos. My bilingual relationship advice, for what it's worth, is you young Latin women out there who are looking to date old, fat, white dudes, in the end, you'll have a nice house and creature comforts, if that's what you're looking for. After having lived in Latin America as a young kid and escaping the fringes of poverty myself, I have to say that's probably what most all of you are looking for. However, my question is, do you really want to be arm candy for an out-of-shape guy who's more in love with Krispy Kremes than he is with you? That is, you as a person? Just realize that's what you'll be settling for. Then she says, it's a bad sign, Johnny. It's always the Latina who has to learn English and her gringo boyfriend who never bothers to learn Spanish. That's the basis of the whole problem. But then after that criticism, she says, full disclosure, Johnny, I have to admit, I much prefer gringo men over Latinos, whether they're Latinos born in Latin America or Latinos born in the States. Don't worry, Johnny, I won't leave you hanging. I'll write you an email explaining that one. You'll be surprised. All right, I'll be looking for that one. Then we have this email from Philly. It says, Johnny, so many of us who have a bit of intelligence have jobs or lives that just aren't challenging. In fact, he says, I'm one of those guys who has what you might call a deadening or soul-depleting job in a cookie-cutter cubicle myself. Truth be told, I wouldn't mind living on half or even a quarter of my salary down in Latin America. So I'm looking to come to one of your seminars, too. If my soul-deadening boss will give me the time off. I'll tell you, Johnny, the worst thing about my job is that I know I'm smarter than my boss. It's a hard, hard thing going to work every day with that fact hanging over you. I think, Johnny, one of the big confusions up here in the States is that people don't know the difference between a job and a career. A job is doing something for money that you wouldn't do for free, whereas a career is demanding, competitive, that gives you some fulfillment. Sure, it's stressful, and often you bring it home with you, but if you really like it, it's something you'd continue to do even if they didn't pay you for it. I have to admit, I'm far from fulfilling that definition myself. I also know I'll never get there if I don't get the hell out of Dodge. And first, that means I'll have to get the hell out of this cubicle. And that's why for the past few years, and after listening to about 100 of your shows, my goal is to go to Latin America and get a business going for myself. I'm tired, as they say, of working for the weekend. I want to have a job where I can look forward to Mondays. Is that even possible? And truthfully, almost no one will admit they hate their job. They'll say they like it. Seems like we all lie about that. Almost no one wants to say their job really sucks. Makes you look like a loser. I know. The more money you make, the more you'll tolerate a crap job. Sounds good at first, but not for long. Then he says, and me, as a sort of closet libertarian, I think the worst kind of job you could possibly have is working for government. As for me, I'd rather work in any brain-deadening private company than to be a back-slapping suck-ass working in government. Anyway, Johnny, can't make it to this seminar, but I'll see you at the next. All right, me, Johnny, here. Yep, just a little sampling of the emails that keep piling in. Just goes to show I got a pretty smart audience out there. Since Stan, mentioned back-slapping suck-asses in government, I like that. That'd be a good t-shirt slogan, too. Hi, I'm a back-slapping suck-ass. I work for government. Kind of says it all. You know, occasionally I get emails from people like this one from Tim. He says, Johnny, you talk a lot about being a libertarian yourself. What got you to that realization? Because I know, as for me, when I grew up, there was no talk about libertarianism at all. It was only Democrats, Republicans, or independents. Though there always were those fringe groups like the communists, socialists, workers' parties and such, but they never got more than 1% of the vote, so they were inconsequential. All right, Tim, thanks for that. And I got to tell you, being in and around Chicago, my family were strict, 100% party line Democrats. That was on my father's side. They were all working class heroes in unions. And on my mother's side, pretty much all Republicans, inventors, engineers, chemists, farmers, and small businessmen. Not that small, though. They were all well over 6 feet. However, being that my sister's godfather was a U.S. Senator, Democrat, of course, everyone in my family, when I was growing up anyway, felt it absolutely necessary to vote Democrat across the board. Meanwhile, the aunts and uncles on my mother's side remained strict Republicans, so it was always, don't talk politics at family get-togethers, because there'll be a fight. Now, you know, in Chicago, being a Democrat has nothing to do with issues and everything to do with being a full employment scheme for all your friends and relatives. Meanwhile, on my mother's side of the family, where they were heavy on the brains, believe me, turns out my own godfather was the first guy that introduced me to libertarianism when I was around 16 years old. How about that? Back then, as I recall, there wasn't even a name for it yet. It was just, hey, Johnny, you got to check out Austrian economics. You got to read this book by Ayn Rand, or this book, The Road to Serfdom, by Nobel Prize winner Friedrich von Hayek. My uncle even told me to read this old book called The Wealth of Nations by Adam Smith, written in, get this, 1776. Hey, there's a date that rings a bell. Anyway, that's how I got started down the road to libertarianism. And man, you know, I learned early on to keep my mouth shut about it. Because there was a time, way back when, if you said you were anything but Democrat or Republican, people thought you were a socialist, communist, or nutso radical. I mean, really, think about it. When did you first learn what the definition of the word libertarian was? I'm betting not so long ago. You'll never learn about it in public school, even though Thomas Jefferson himself was a pure libertarian, which is all about individual rights, very limited government, very small army, free markets, little or no government intervention. That means no subsidies either, meaning the government should get their ass out of almost everything, since governments radically screw up and destroy everything they touch. And I invite anyone to prove me wrong on that one. By the way, right after the American Revolution, the original 13 colonies had the closest you'll ever see to pure libertarianism. As for me, in reality, I'm kind of a soft core libertarian because I know you have to have a half a brain to operate and function well in that kind of world, and it's just not going to happen. Too many millions, if not billions, of sheep out there. As long as Big Brother keeps growing like a cancer and controls things like the educational system, there's just no hope. Which is why practically everyone listening to this program right now has a plan B in the works or is seriously contemplating one right now. By the way, back in my college days, people would say, Johnny, who are you going to vote for? And I'd say, you got a second to hear this? I've got a system. It's called VOTI. That's VOTI. VOTI. Stands for Vote Out the Incumbent. And back then, practically every one of my engineering buddies felt exactly the same way. We'd say, go into the voting booth. If you recognize any of the names at all on the ballot, 99% of the time that it'd be an incumbent, you don't vote for him. You vote for complete unknowns. And that, we all thought us engineering types way back when, could actually affect some kind of change, but of course that didn't work. You know, the follies of youth and all that. Meanwhile, no matter what you say, people instinctively pull the lever for the incumbent. What a bunch of sheep, huh? And today, when people say, who are you going to vote for? I say, nobody. And then they say, well, Johnny, you have nothing to complain about then. You don't vote, you can't complain. In my response, I always say then, look, everyone who votes is implicitly admitting they believe that the system works. I know it doesn't work. You know it doesn't work. So if you vote, you are a hypocrite. No matter who you vote for, your vote says you believe the system works, or you wouldn't be voting. I know that you know the political system is beyond broken, and it's been that way for decades and decades. In my opinion, you're a deluded fool if you buy into that rigged system. Except, and this is even a far-out exception, on the very, very local dog-catcher level. Still, even in that case, it's about personalities and who you know, right? Not about works and deeds and actual philosophies. However, in the interest of not sounding like a total pessimist, I have to say I have a very simple solution that'll fix everything. And man, is it simple, like Occam's razor. Often, the simplest solution is the best one. I know you're thinking everyone thinks they have the answer to make the world a better place and to root out all the bad politicians. Well, my solution, and you heard it here first, or maybe you heard it in the past show, can't remember. It's term limits, folks, and this is how it works. 2 terms for everyone, 4 years and 4 years. The first 4 years in office, the second 4 years in prison. Better yet, the first 4 years in prison and the second 4 years in office, because maybe that corrupt scumbag running for office could learn a kind of a lesson in humility and human kindness while in prison, and then when he gets out of the slammer and takes his place in office, he becomes a better man, but I wouldn't count on it. Because, you know, all prisons seem to produce is a better class of criminal. But I digress. Man, did I digress. We're supposed to be talking about Latin America, right? Well, let's get to it. Now we have a question from a listener. It comes up quite often. Firearms in Latin America. Comes from one of our seminar repeat offenders, Mr. Altiplano Drifter. Says, Johnny, we just lost an hour today in the States. Now it's dark by 6 p.m. Not a big fan of that. All right, let me cut in for a second, Johnny, again. You know, throughout Latin America, at least most of the places gringos and expats end up having their plan B, there is no daylight saving time, nor is it necessary. It seems the sun, like a person on a high-fiber diet, is pretty regular, as it has been, you know, for a couple of billion years now, coming up at around 6 o'clock in the morning and setting around 6 at night. It's one of those things you might miss, or maybe not. Coming from a northern state like me, Illinois, where in the winter it's dark at 4 o'clock and in the summer, around 8 or 9. So when you get down to Latin America, will you find it boring and monotonous that the sun rises and sets at the same time all year round? Personally, I don't think so, but you be the judge. Of course, if you were to go extremely south of the border, as they say, down Argentine way, you'll get those huge seasonal variations in sunrise and sunset, only in reverse because it's southern hemisphere, and you'll get snow and cold, which is why you can count me out. I don't want to live there. But the truth is, most gringos and expats do not relocate to southern Chile, Brazil, or Argentina. Not too much, for a lot of reasons too, most of which we've already discussed on previous shows. Anyway, Mr. Drifter continues by saying, "Hey Johnny, borrowed your term FBD, full baggage disclosure. Like that a lot. Problem is, most people with a lot of baggage aren't aware and they won't disclose it. They aren't aware, conscious, and or honest enough with themselves to be capable of fully disclosing their own baggage to you. Thus, once again, the crucial tool needed is a high level of discernment, which unfortunately many humans are still pretty low on. Hopefully, though, some will be well advised by your shows." All right, me, Johnny, here again. You know, that reminds me of something my mother once told me a long time ago, and I wish, in a way, she wouldn't have. Come to think of it, expat Eddie said it too, but I'm sure he got it from my mother. She said, and it really sticks with me, that every other person you pass on the street is below average. That's right, it's an absolutely correct statistic. And at first, you know, your mind doesn't want to accept that. Sounds so cruel and un-PC, but it's absolutely correct. Then, to top that off, not so long ago, I was listening to my favorite guru of the moment, Jordan Peterson, who wrote that great book, 12 Rules for Life, An Antidote to Chaos. He talks about the fact that the U.S. Army does IQ testing on everyone, and if you have an IQ of 80 or below, they will not take you because there isn't a single job in the Army that you'll be able to do successfully. The U.S. Army says if you have an IQ of 80 or below, you're untrainable. Now, as Jordan Peterson points out, about 10 to 12% of the population of the U.S. has an IQ of 80 or under. In other words, forget about equality of achievement or opportunity. There will always be, and let's take the case of the United States, over 30 million people right now who are basically untrainable for any job. And just like Jesus said in the New Testament, the poor will always be with us, so will that chronic 10% who just cannot be trained to do anything. Hey, that's life. It's just the way things are. That means, as my mother would say, 1 in 10 people you pass on the street is not able to function on his own and will always be dependent on others or government to survive. Though it beats me how there's such a huge percentage of idiots, morons, and pinheads in government. Though all of us with half a brain have known for ages that government is like a cesspool where the biggest chunks of shit float to the top. But I digress again. Sorry about that. Anyway, our repeat offender, Mr. Drifter, goes on to say, "I've been researching the gang, gun, and crime situation in Guatemala and Central America. Wondering, Johnny, if you've ever done a show focusing on that somewhere back in time. Actually," he says, "I'm planning on doing some remote hiking and or camping in this coming year. Therefore, seems wise to be armed, no matter where you are, and know how to use those arms whilst roaming around the backwoods of Latin America. Was planning on buying a couple of handguns and possibly an AR-15 for that and for household protection, as my place will probably be somewhat remote, similar to your setup, I would think. In Utah, where I come from, these can be bought from private sellers without any ID background checks, etc., just like buying a bicycle. Is this possible in Guatemala or the rest of Central America? And would their selection be reasonably good? What are your thoughts about this?" All right, Drifter, thanks for that. Well, I'll tell you some of my thoughts anyway. In fact, I produced my own guns, arms, cops, and ammo special report. I think it's something like 10 pages long. It hits on most all those things you were talking about. And I give it out to everyone who comes to my Expat Insider Seminar. So, Mr. Drifter, just check out that big download I gave you after the seminar. You'll see it in there. And by the way, for all of you coming to my Expat Insider Seminar, you'll receive a huge download of around 70 different reports. That's 70, more than half of which I've written myself. Not only do they go over and reinforce most of the stuff I talk about at the seminar, They cover just about everything you'll possibly need to get that plan B going. Now, I'm not a gun nut, but I had a few when I lived back in the States, and I have a few in Latin America. And I'm not a game hunter or anything. Well, a long time ago, my uncles took me duck and goose hunting, but I never shot anything. I wouldn't want to do that, but I think you should have guns for protection, no matter where you are. When people look at me funny and say, oh, Johnny, guns, I'm anti-gun, I say, okay, is the world getting better or worse in your opinion? And everyone, to a person, says, worse. I rest my case. Anyway, best gun for home protection by far, 12-gauge pump shotgun. Pump, of course, because almost nothing can go wrong with it. Whereas if you have an expensive, fancy shotgun, like a Remington 1200 semi-auto, I used to have one. It jammed up once in a while, but never a pump action. And maybe if you live out in the boonies, you want a 22 long rifle with a scope. And a nice big bore, loud handgun, like a 45 or a 357, something that makes a hell of a lot of noise. There you have it, three guns, that's all. That's only if you live out in the boonies. Probably only need a shotgun if you live in the city. You wanted my opinion? There it is. As far as going out, doing the nature trail hiking thing in whatever Latin country, here's my advice. If you've never been on a particular trail before, take a few people with you. Take a local guide. You know, a lot of people, especially hikers and backpackers, will go up volcanoes in Latin America. That's a big pastime. I've done it. For that, I always recommend go with a group and a real seasoned tour guide who does that kind of thing. You can find them all over the internet. The thing is, I never recommend that you just say, hey, let's go walking this Sunday. We'll pick a direction and go towards that mountain. Looks cool. I think it's imprudent to go on a hike or a trek to a place you've never gone before, alone or just with another person. But once you've done it yourself with a group and a tour guide, by all means, go back and do it again as many times as you want. But don't go exploring in another country all by yourself or even with a couple of people if none of you has been down that trail before. Which brings up a universal question or concern. I hear once in a while, Johnny, do you know anyone who's been assaulted or attacked while trekking up mountainsides or doing the hiking thing? Well, the truth is I've been on a few hikes myself. Nothing's happened to me. And in my 27 plus years down here, it's never happened to any of my friends or acquaintances either. However, if you are on the Gringo Tourist Trail, let's say in Costa Rica or Panama, and you run into a bunch of gringos and you ask them if they know of anyone who's been assaulted, robbed, whatever, on one of those nature hiking treks or overnight camping trips, inevitably someone will pipe up and say, yeah, I know someone, or I heard about it. It happened to a friend of a friend. So, yes, these things must be happening, but not with any kind of great frequency at all. Or I would have heard about them. In fact, I'd be hearing about them all the time, and I just don't. Fact is, last time I got in a conversation with a couple of gringos on just that subject. I heard the story of gringo tourists who'd been robbed hiking up a volcano. And though the gringos who told me didn't actually know the people and no one could give me any specific details, well, those are the kind of rumors that go around. And of course, if you're just out there alone or with a friend in the middle of nowhere, out in the boonies in a place you've never been before, it's not a very wise thing to do when you're in a foreign country. You have to be smart about these things. All right, then, finally, the email goes on to say, Johnny, been watching a series called Hunting Hitler on the History Channel. Seeing as you've been all over South America, it might interest you. A well-done and documented show as they track Hitler and some of the guys into Argentina, Brazil, and Colombia. Though, as everyone knows, the media play on the story has always been he died in that bunker in Berlin. Then he says, I really wasn't aware of how many large German communities were up and running in the 30s and 40s in places like Argentina. I imagine, he says, most are still going strong. They based the show on recently released FBI files from the 40s that provide a lot of details on Hitler and his guys moving through South America. You can actually get those shows off the History Channel website. Then he gives the links. All right, you want my take on that? I think Hitler went to South America. If you think I'm wacky for saying that, you ought to go to this website called Shark Hunters. Yes, Shark Hunters. It's a group consisting of former World War II U.S. submarine officers and their crews, along with, now get this, a large membership contingent of German U-boat commanders and their crews. Yep, they all belong to the same organization called Shark Hunters. Now, of course, very few of those people are alive anymore, but In the past 20 years or so, when many still were alive and telling their stories, this organization has come up with hundreds, if not thousands, of documents and testimonials of how German U-boat after German U-boat, right before the end of the war, brought tons of gold to Argentina and Brazil, along with some of the very top Nazi officials, including Hitler. His top guys allegedly drugged him in the bunker and brought him and Eva Braun aboard a submarine. There is testimony that says he lived in a small town in Argentina for another 10 years or so under the pretense of being a retired doctor. Don't believe it? Go to Shark Hunters, check it out, you'll be amazed. You'll also be amazed if you take a ride through the boonies in Argentina. You'll come across little quaint towns and villages you'd swear were picture postcards from the Alps in Germany. Hey, I've seen a couple of those places, and guess what? The townspeople are bilingual. They speak Spanish and German. Now, if you think I'm crazy, get some boots on the ground there and see for yourself. Oh, and one more thing about Hitler. You might recall they found his skull in that bunker in Berlin, and the Russians took it and had it ever since. And now the Russians admit after DNA testing, it's not him. For the full story on that, go to Shark Hunters. Or download that book, Hitler in Argentina. By the way, it's only one of many books that documents a story most people do not want to hear about. All right, on to some seminar business. You know, my upcoming January 2019 Expat Insider Seminar will get underway in about a month and a half now. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com, all one word, for all the details and info. We'll be doing two countries this time, the Altiplano of Guatemala, where the weather is spring-like all year round, and we'll be hitting the beaches of El Salvador, too. And by the way, I've got some people coming down who would like to have a roommate. So if you're also thinking of coming down as a single and want to save a couple of $100, sharing a double occupancy hotel room with someone of the same gender, of course, just shoot me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget, you can kill two birds with one stone, come down to the seminar and apply for a Guatemalan permanent or temporary residency, too. To do that, remember, you'll have to stay on an extra week after the seminar. Oh, and if you want to know the residency application process, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you the step-by-step process so you can get started. You will need to get some paperwork from your home state.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy.